지구로 전하는 아픔만 이만 아파 같은 삶만 완전 모인 사탄아 마태 지구로 전하는 아픔만 완전 모인 사탄아 마태 Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare 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 Rama, Rama 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 Hare Hare, Hari Bo, Mauri Bo, Hari Bo, Jai Om. Vishnupad Paramahansa Paravidikacharya also tenas at Shi Shimad His Divine Grace Abhaya Chandana Bhaktivananda Goswami Srila Prabhupada Kijai Iskan Founder Acharya Srila Prabhupada Kijai Anantagoti Vaishnav Vrinda Kijai Namacharya Srila Haridas Thakur Kijai Prem Se Kaho Sri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Shidwaita Garadha Shivasari Gaur Bhakta Vrinda Kijai Sri Sri Radhakrishna Gopikopinath Sayam Kunda Radhakunda Giri Gopuran Kijai Vrindavan Kijai Maturam Kijai Jagannatha Swami Kajai, Yamunamai Kajai, Srimati Lasa Devi Kajai, Samaveda Bhakta Vrinda Kajai, Gaur Premananda Hari Hari Bo. All glorious the assembled devotees, all glorious the assembled devotees, all glorious the assembled devotees, all glorious to Shri Guru and Gauranga, Srila Prabhupada Kijai, Nama Om Vishnu Padaya, Krishna Pristaya Bhutale, Srimati Bhakti Padanta Swamati Tinamani, Namaste Saraswati Devi, Gauravani Pachari Nivashesha Shanyavadi Paschacha Deja Tardi. So we are going to read the translation to Guru Vandana. The lotus feet of our spiritual master are the only way by which we can attain pure devotional service. I bow down to his lotus feet with great awe and reverence. By his grace one can cross the ocean of material suffering and obtain the mercy of Krishna. My only wish is to have my consciousness purified by the words emanating from his lotus mouth. Attachment to his lotus feet is the perfection that fulfills all desires. He opens my darkened eyes and fills my heart with transcendental knowledge. He is my Lord birth after birth. From him ecstatic prema emanates, by him ignorance is destroyed. The Vedic scriptures sing of his character. Our spiritual master is the ocean of mercy, the friend of the poor, and the Lord and master of the devotees. O Master, be merciful unto us. Give ye the shade of your lotus feet, your fame is spread all over the three worlds. Srila Prabhupada Ki Jai. Actually, just before we go on to the Krishna book, I just want to tell a little Prabhupada memory that I heard today. Srila Prabhupada, in the final days, he wanted to go to Govardhan on an ox cart. And the doctor said to him that you cannot go on an ox cart, it will kill you. You can go on a flower airplane if you want, because the doctor had firm faith that Prabhupada had the ability to call for a flower airplane. But anyway, Prabhupada kept insisting, the devotees kept insisting that he shouldn't go, and finally the devotees went outside to discuss the whole matter, and they came back and they were begging and crying to Prabhupada, please don't go, please don't go. And Prabhupada said, okay, if it's causing you too much anxiety, I won't go. And then, right after that, Tamakrishnamaraj went up to Srila Prabhupada and just basically, Prabhupada, how can you do this? You're causing us so much anxiety. We can't tolerate it. I can't tolerate it anymore. And then Prabhupada turned around and said, that is my duty. So you see, during Prabhupada's final pastimes, he was doing things actually to draw the devotees closer to him. Because he understood that the devotees' dedication to him was the factor, and is the factor, that will keep the Krishna conscious movement together. So Prabhupada was really trying to instill in us this deep devotion. So, wonderful story. I mean, heart-wrenching, but it's a wonderful story. So now we're going to go on to the Krishna book. So, Om Ganat Timiranda Shag Ananjana Shlakaya Chakshur Miritam Yena Tasmai Shri Gurave Namaha. I offer my respectful obeisances unto the lotus feet of my spiritual master, His Divine Grace, A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Srila Prabhupada, who so kindly opened my eyes with the torchlight of knowledge while I was blinded in the darkness of ignorance. And so now we will share the screen. right. Let's see, where is it? I got so many open windows here. But sometimes, here it is. Chapter 21, Srila Prabhupada's Krishna book. And chapter 21 is the gopis attracted by the flute. So now we're getting into very intimate pastimes of Krishna and the gopis, and specifically Krishna and Srimati Radharani. The very intimate chapters here. Okay, chapter 21, the gopis attracted by the flute. With the arrival of the beautiful autumn season, the waters and lakes and rivers became as clear as crystal and filled with fragrant lotus flowers and breezes blew very pleasantly. At that time, Krishna entered the forest of Vrindavan with the cows and cowherd boys. Krishna was very much pleased with the atmosphere of the forest, where flowers bloomed and bees and drones hummed very jubilantly. While the birds, trees, and plants were all looking very happy, Krishna, tending the cows and accompanied by Sri Balaram and the cowherd boys, began to vibrate his transcendental flute. After hearing the vibration of the flute of Krishna, the gopis in Vrindavan remembered him and began to talk amongst themselves about how nicely Krishna was playing his flute. When the gopis were describing the sweet vibration of Krishna's flute, they also remembered their pastimes with him, and thus their minds became disturbed, and they were unable to describe completely the beautiful vibration. While discussing the transcendental vibration, they remembered also how Krishna dressed decorated with a peacock feather on his head, just like a dancing actor, and with blue flowers pushed over his ear. His garment glowed yellow gold, and he's garlanded with a Vaijayanti necklace, dressed in such an attractive way. Krishna filled up the holes of his flute with the nectar emanating from his lips. So they remembered him entering the forest of Vrindavan, which is always glorified by the footprints of Krishna and his companions. Krishna was very expert in playing the flute, and the gopis were captivated by the sound vibration, which was attractive not only to them, but to all living creatures who heard it. One of the gopis told her friends, "The highest perfection of the eyes is to see Krishna and Balaram entering the forest and playing their flutes and tending the cows with their friends." Persons who are constantly engaged in the transcendental meditation. There's an interesting episode in the Vidugdha Madhava, where Radharani is feeling very unhappy because she's thinking that she's attracted to three different men. And she's thinking, "Oh, I'm very unchaste." And the description of the three different men is as follows. One is the person who plays the flute, obviously Krishna. Two, that beautiful young boy, threefold bending form. And then the person named Krishna. So she was so bewildered with love of Krishna, she thought they were three different people. Persons who are constantly engaged, and when Krishna plays his flute, the inanimate objects become animate, and the animate objects, or entities, become inanimate. In other words, the river stops flowing, and the human beings, they just become stunned, frozen in place. Persons who were constantly engaged in the transcendental meditation of seeing Krishna internally and externally by thinking of him playing the flute, entering the Vrindavan forest, and tending the cows with the cowherd boys have really attained the perfection of samadhi. Samadhi trance means absorption of all the activities of the senses in a particular object, and the gopis indicate that the pastimes of Krishna are the perfection of all meditation and samadhi. It is also confirmed in the Bhagavad Gita that anyone who is always absorbed in the thought of Krishna is the topmost of all yogis. That's 6th chapter, text 47. It's interesting. Samadhi. Yogi. Another gopi expressed her opinion that Krishna and Balaram, while tending the cows with the cowherd boys, appeared just like actors going to play on a dramatic stage. Krishna was dressed in glowing garments of yellow, Balaram in blue, and they held new twigs of mango tree, peacock feathers, and bunches of flowers in their hands. Dressed with garlands of lotus flowers, they were sometimes singing very sweetly among their friends. One gopi told her friends, "How is it Krishna and Balaram are looking so beautiful?" Another gopi said, "My dear friends, we cannot even think of his bamboo flute. What sort of pious activities did it execute so that it is now enjoying the nectar of the lips of Krishna, which is actually the property of us gopis? Krishna sometimes kisses the gopis, therefore the transcendental nectar of his lips is available only to them." So the gopis asked, "How is it possible that the flute, which is nothing but a bamboo rod, is always engaged enjoying the nectar from Krishna's lips? Because the flute is engaged in the service of the Supreme Lord, the mother and father of the flute must be very happy." Of course, it's described that Krishna has various flutes, some which are very short, some which are medium-sized, and some which are very, very long. He doesn't only have one flute. "The lakes and rivers are considered to be the mothers of the trees because the trees live simply by drinking water. So the waters of the lakes and rivers of Vrindavan were in a happy mood, full of blooming lotus flowers, because the waters were thinking, how is it that our son, the bamboo rod, is enjoying the nectar of Krishna's lips? The bamboo trees standing by the banks of the rivers and the lakes were also happy to see their descendants so engaged in the service of the Lord, just as persons who are advanced in transcendental knowledge take pleasure in seeing their descendants engaged in the service of the Lord. The trees were overwhelmed with joy and were incessantly yielding honey, which flowed from the beehives hanging on their branches." Another gopi spoke thus to her friends about Krishna. "Dear friends, our Vrindavan is proclaiming the glories of this entire earth because this planet is glorified by the lotus footprints of the son of Devaki. Besides that, when Govinda plays his flute, the peacocks immediately become mad as if they had heard that rumbling of a new cloud. When all the animals and trees and plants, either on the top of Govardhan Hill or in the valley, see the dancing of the peacocks, they all stand still and listen to the transcendental sound of the flute with great attention. We think that this boon is not possible or available on any other planet. Although the gopis were village coward women and girls, they had extensive Vedic knowledge, such as the effect of Vedic civilization. People in general would learn the highest truths of the Vedas simply by hearing from authoritative sources." Another gopi said, "My dear friends, just see the deer. Although they are dumb animals, they have approached the son of Maharaj Nanda Krishna. Not only are they attracted by the dress of Krishna and Balaram, but as soon as they hear the playing of the flute, the deer, along with their husbands, offer respectful obeisances unto the Lord by looking at him with great affection. The gopis were envious of the deer because the deer were able to offer their service to Krishna along with their husbands. The gopis thought themselves not so fortunate because whenever they wanted to go to Krishna, their husbands were not very happy." Of course, their husbands are all devotees of Krishna. And this was their act in order to please Krishna. Everyone there is trying to please Krishna. You shouldn't think, oh, these husbands are not devotees. They're devotees. Just like sometimes Radharani has her apparent, I wouldn't say enemy, but opposition, who is Chandravali. And Chandravali is just trying to please Radharani by doing that. Another gopi said, "My dear friends, Krishna is so nicely dressed that he appears to be the impetus to various kinds of ceremonies held by the womenfolk. Even the wives of the denizens of heaven become attracted after hearing the transcendental sound of his flute. Although they are traveling in the air in their airplanes, enjoying the company of their husbands, on hearing the sound of Krishna's flute, they immediately become perturbed. Their hair is loosened and their tight belts are slackened. This means that the transcendental sound of the flute of Krishna extended to all corners of the universe. Also, it is significant that the gopis knew about the different kinds of airplanes flying in the sky." Another gopi said to her friends, "My dear friends, the cows are also charmed as soon as they hear the transcendental sound of the flute of Krishna. It sounds to them like the pouring of nectar, and they immediately spread their long ears just to catch the liquid nectar of the flute. As for the cows, they are seen with the nipples of their mothers pressed in their mouths, but they cannot suck the milk. They remain struck with devotion, and tears glide down from their eyes, illustrating vividly how they are embracing Krishna heart to heart. These phenomena indicate that even the cows and calves of Vrindavan knew how to cry for Krishna and embrace him heart to heart. Actually, the perfection of Krishna consciousness can be culminated in the shedding of tears from the eyes. That's called longing, actually. The acharyas say that's the price of pure devotional service, crying for Krishna. Another young gopi told her mother, "My dear mother, the birds who are all looking at Krishna playing on his flute are sitting very attentively on the branches and twigs of different trees. From their features, it appears that they have forgotten everything and are engaged only in hearing Krishna's flute. This proves that they are not ordinary birds. They are great sages and devotees, and just to hear Krishna's flute, they have appeared in Vrindavan forest as birds. Great sages and scholars are interested in Vedic knowledge, but the essence of Vedic knowledge is stated in the Bhagavad Gita. Vedais chasavair ahameva vedya." That's from the Gita 15:15. It's a very important verse. Matasmriti Vijnanavaponam chahan. Anyway. Sarvasya chaham ri sadavishta matasmriti Vijnanavaponam chahan. Vedais chasavair ahameva vedya. Vedantakrit Vedavid Evachaham, that's the whole verse. I'm the knower of the Vedas, I'm to be known by the Vedas. By all the Vedas I'm to be known. Through the knowledge of the Vedas, Krishna has to be understood. From the behavior of these birds, it appeared that they were great scholars in Vedic knowledge and that they took to Krishna's transcendental vibration and rejected all branches of Vedic knowledge. Even the river Yamuna, very much desiring to embrace the lotus feet of Krishna, after hearing the transcendental vibration of his flute, broke her fierce waves to flow very nicely with lotus flowers in her hands, just to present flowers to Mukunda with deep feeling. The scorching heat of the autumn sunshine was sometimes intolerable, and therefore the clouds in the sky appeared in sympathy above Krishna and Balaram and their boyfriends while they engaged in blowing their flutes. The clouds served as a soothing umbrella over their heads just to make friendship with Krishna. The aborigine girls became fully satisfied when they smeared their faces and breasts with the dust of Vrindavan, which was reddish from the touch of Krishna's lotus feet. The aborigine girls had very full breasts, and they were also very lusty. But when their lovers touched their breasts, the girls were not very much satisfied. When they came out into the mist of the forest, they saw that while Krishna was walking, some of the leaves and creepers of Vrindavan had turned reddish from the kumkuma powder which fell from his lotus feet. His lotus feet are held by the gopis on their breasts, which are smeared with kumkuma powder. But when Krishna travels in the Vrindavan forest with Balaram and his boyfriends, the reddish powder falls on the ground. So the lusty aborigine girls, while looking toward Krishna playing his flute, saw the reddish kumkuma on the ground and immediately took it and smeared it over their faces and breasts. In this way, they became fully satisfied, although they were not satisfied when their lovers touched their breasts. All material lusty desires can be immediately satisfied if one comes in contact with Krishna consciousness. This is such an important point. Just by coming in contact with Krishna consciousness, then lust becomes dissipated. And lust is our eternal enemy. Avritam jnanam etena jnaninam nichupayana kala rupena kundaya dushparena lena cha. Is never satisfied. It's like pouring gasoline onto a fire. Except when you take the Krishna consciousness, then lust disappears. No more lust. Another gopi began to praise the unique position of Govardhan Hill in this way. How fortunate is this Govardhan Hill? For it is enjoying the association of Lord Krishna and Balaram, who are accustomed to walking on it. Thus Govardhan is always in touch with the lotus feet of the Lord. And because Govardhan Hill is so obliged to Lord Krishna and Balaram, it is supplying different kinds of fruits, roots, and herbs, as well as very pleasing crystal water from its lakes in presentation to the Lord. The best presentation offered by Govardhan Hill, however, is newly grown grass for the cows and calves. Govardhan Hill knows how to please the Lord by pleasing his most beloved associates, the cows and cowherd boys. Another gopi said, "Everything appears wonderful when Krishna and Balaram travel in the forest of Vrindavan playing their flutes and making intimate friendship with all kinds of moving and non-moving creatures. When Krishna and Balaram play on their transcendental flutes, The moving creatures become stunned and stop their activities, and the non-moving living creatures, like trees and plants, begin to shiver with ecstasy. These are the wonderful reactions to the vibration of the transcendental flutes of Krishna and Balaram. Wow. Krishna and Balaram carried winding ropes on their shoulders and in their hands, just like ordinary coward boys. While milking cows, coward boys bind the cow's hind legs with a small rope. This rope almost always hangs from the shoulders of the coward boys, and it was not absent from the shoulders of Krishna and Balaram. In spite of their being the Supreme Personality of Godhead, they played exactly like coward boys, and therefore everything became wonderful and attractive. While Krishna was engaged in tending the cows in the forest of Vrindavan, or on Govardhan Hill, the gopis in the village were always absorbed in thinking of him and discussing his different pastimes. This is the perfect example of Krishna consciousness, to somehow or other remain always engrossed in thoughts of Krishna. The vivid example is always present in the behavior of the gopis. Therefore, Lord Chaitanya declared that no one can worship the Supreme Lord by any method which is better than the method of the gopis. The gopis were not born in very high Brahmin or Kshatriya families. They were born in the families of Vaishyas, and not in big mercantile communities, but in the families of coward men. They were not very well educated, although they heard all sorts of knowledge from the Brahmanas, the authorities of Vedic knowledge. The gopis' only purpose was to remain always absorbed in thoughts of Krishna. Thus ends the Bhaktivedanta purport of the 21st chapter of Krishna, the gopis attracted by the flute. Wow, what a wonderful chapter. And so we're going to go on. We have time. We go on. We did 21. Looks like we're going through the Krishna book rather quickly. We'll go to 22. Chapter 22, Stealing the Garments of the Unmarried Gopi Girls. Now, you may think this is rather radical that Krishna did this, but the reason Krishna did this was just so that he would be de facto married to the gopis. Of course, Krishna also had the marriages to the gopis when the coward boys and the calves were stolen by Lord Brahma. Remember the story? And Krishna manifested himself in terms, in the form or forms of the coward boys and calves. And during that year, the coward boys got married to the gopis. So in essence, Krishna was actually married to the gopis. Tricky, tricky, tricky. So here's another tricky, tricky, tricky chapter. According to Vedic civilization, unmarried girls from 10 to 14 years of age are supposed to worship either Lord Shiva or Goddess Durga in order to get a nice husband. But the unmarried girls of Vrindavan were already attracted by the beauty of Krishna. They were, however, engaged in the worship of Goddess Durga in the beginning of the Hemanta season, just prior to the winter season. The first month of Hemanta is Agrahayana, October, November, and at that time, all the unmarried gopis in Vrindavan began to worship Goddess Durga with a vow. They first ate avishana, a kind of food prepared by boiling together mung dal and rice without any spices or turmeric. According to Vedic injunction, this kind of food is recommended to purify the body before one enacts a ritualistic ceremony. It's also quite austere. It doesn't sound too bad compared to my diet. So all the unmarried gopis in Vrindavan used to daily worship Goddess Katyayani. That's Durga. Early in the morning after taking a bath in Yamuna, Katyayani is another name for Goddess Durga. The goddess is worshipped by preparing a doll made of sand from the bank of the Yamuna. It is recommended in the Vedic scriptures that a deity may be made from different kinds of material elements. It can be painted, made of metal, made of jewels, made of wood, earth, stone, or it can be conceived within the heart of the worshipper. The Mayavadi philosopher takes all these forms of the deity to be imaginary, but actually they're accepted in the Vedic scriptures to be identical with either the Supreme Lord or respective demigod. Now, even a picture of Krishna is a deity. You know, can be made of paper, which is actually wood. So even a two-dimensional representation of Krishna is a deity. Krishna is there. and also the spiritual master is present in his or her picture, if you have a lady spiritual master. The unmarried gopis use the prepared deity of the goddess Durga and worship it with chandanapulp, garlands, incense, lamps, and all kinds of presentations, fruits, grain, and twigs of plants. After worshipping, it is custom to pray for some benediction. The unmarried girls used to pray with great devotion to goddess Kachiyani, addressing her as follows. O supreme external energy of the personality of Godhead, O supreme mystic power, O supreme controller of this material world, O goddess, please be kind to us and arrange for our marriage with the son of Nanda Maharaj, Krishna. The Vaishnavas generally do not worship any demigods. Srila Narottama Das Thakur is strictly forbidden all worship of the demigods for anyone who wants to advance in pure devotional service. Yet the gopis, who are beyond compare in their affection for Krishna, were seen to worship Durga. Now, I was just reading in the Jiva Dharma how there was an accusation about, there was a demigod worshiper who approached a devotee and says, why don't you take the remnants of the devas, of the demigods? And this devotee explained that the devas and the demigods, they eat, what do they eat? They eat prasadam that's offered to Krishna. You understand? And so, if you have the prasadams offered to Krishna, you offer to the demigods, and the demigods are devotees, and you can take the remnants. But if you worship them directly and just offer them food, that's a vidipurvakam, and they're not accepting. So even though they're devotees, they're not accepting unless they're given Krishna prasadam. Just like in Bhubaneswara, which is called Gupta Kashi, which is one of the main places for Lord Shiva, they take, which is very close to Jagannath Puri, they take Lord Jagannath's remnants from Jagannath Puri and transport them every day to Bhubaneswara and offer them to Lord Shiva, and Lord Shiva is very happy to eat the remnants of Lord Jagannath. And then you can take the remnants of Lord Shiva. But if you worship directly, that's called avidipurvakam. That means the improper process. The worshippers of demigods sometimes mention that the gopis worship goddess Durga. But we must understand the purpose of the gopis. Generally, people worship goddess Durga for some material benediction. Here, the gopis pray to the goddess to become wives of Lord Krishna. The purport is that if Krishna is the center of activity, a devotee can adopt any means to achieve that goal. The gopis could adopt any means to satisfy or serve Krishna. That was the super excellent characteristic of the gopis. They worshiped goddess Durga completely for 1 month in order to have Krishna as their husband. Every day they prayed for Krishna, the son of Nanda Maharaj, to become their husband. Early in the morning, the gopis used to go to the bank of the Yamuna to take a bath. They would assemble together and, holding one another's hands, loudly sing of the wonderful pastimes of Krishna. It is an old system among Indian girls and women that when they take a bath in the river, they place their garments on the bank and dip into the water completely naked. The portion of the river where the girls and women bathe was strictly prohibited to any male, and this is still the system. The Supreme Personality of Godhead, knowing the minds of the unmarried gopis, young gopis, blessed them with their desired objective. They had all prayed to Krishna to become, for Krishna to become their husband, and Krishna wanted to fulfill their desires. At the end of the month, Krishna, along with his friends, appeared on the scene. Another name of Krishna is Yogeshwara, master of all mystic powers. By practicing meditation, the yogi can study the psychic movement of other men, and certainly Krishna could understand the desire of the gopis. Appearing on the scene, Krishna immediately collected all the garments of the gopis, climbed up into a nearby tree, and with a smiling face began to speak to them. My dear girls, he said, please come here, one after another, and pray for your garments and then take them away. I'm not joking with you. I'm just telling you the truth. I have no desire to play any joke with you, for you are tired from observing the regulative principles for 1 month by worshipping goddess Kachiyani. Please do not come here all at once. Come alone. I want to see each of you in your complete beauty, for you all have thin waists. I requested you to come alone. Now please comply. Now, of course, in the material world, this would be called abuse, actually sexual abuse. But this was their desire. When the girls in the water heard such joking words from Krishna, they began to look at one another and smile. They were very joyous to hear such a request from Krishna because they were already in love with him. Out of shyness, they looked at one another, but they could not come out of the water because they were naked. Due to remaining in the water for a long time, they felt cold and were shivering. Yet upon hearing the pleasing, joking words of Govinda, their minds were perturbed with great joy. They told Krishna, "Dear son of Nanda Maharaj, please do not joke with us in that way. It is completely unjust to us. You are a very respectable boy because you are the son of Nanda Maharaj and you are very dear to us. But you should not play this joke on us because now we are all shivering from the cold water. Kindly deliver our garments immediately, otherwise we shall suffer." They then began to appeal to Krishna with great submission. "Dear Shyamasundara," they said, "we are all your eternal servitors. Whatever you order us to do, we are obliged to perform without hesitation because we consider it our religious duty. But if you insist on putting this proposal to us, which is impossible to perform, then certainly we will have to go to Nanda Maharaj and lodge a complaint against you. If Nanda Maharaj does not take action, then we shall tell King Kamsa about your misbehavior." Upon hearing this appeal by the unmarried gopis, Krishna answered, "My dear girls, if you think that you are my eternal servitors and you are always ready to execute my order, then my request is that, with your smiling faces, please come here alone, one after another, and take away your garments. If you do not come here, however, and if you lodge complaints with my father, I shall not care anyway, for I know my father is old and cannot take any action against me." When the gopis saw that Krishna was strong and determined, they had no alternative but to abide by his order. One after another, they came out of the water, but because they were completely naked, they tried to cover their nakedness by placing their left hand over their pubic area. In that posture, they were all shivering. Their simple presentation was so pure that Lord Krishna immediately became pleased with them. All the unmarried gopis who prayed to Katyayani to have Krishna as their husband were thus satisfied. A woman cannot be naked before any male except her husband. The unmarried gopis desired Krishna as their husband, and he immediately fulfilled their desire in this way. Being pleased with them, he took their garments on his shoulder and began to speak as follows. "My dear girls, you have committed a great offense by going naked in the river Yamuna. Because of this, the predominating deity of the Yamuna, Varuna Deva, has become displeased with you. Please, therefore, just touch your foreheads with folded palms and bow down before the demigod Varuna in order to be excused from this offensive act." The gopis were all simple souls, and whatever Krishna said, they took to be true. In order to be freed from the wrath of Varuna Deva, as well as to fulfill the desired end of their vows and ultimately to please their worshipful Lord Krishna, they immediately abided by his order. Thus they became the greatest lovers of Krishna and his most obedient servitors. Nothing can compare with the Krishna consciousness of the gopis. Actually, the gopis did not care for Varuna or any other demigod. They only wanted to satisfy Krishna. Krishna became very ingratiated and satisfied by the simple dealings of the gopis, and he immediately delivered their respective garments one after another. Although Krishna cheated the young unmarried gopis and made them stand naked before him and enjoy joking words with them, and although he treated them just like dolls and stole their garments, they were still pleased with him and never lodged complaints against him. This attitude of the gopis is described by Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu when he prays, "My dear Lord Krishna, you may embrace me or trample me under your feet, or you may make me brokenhearted by not being present before me." This is the last verse of the Shikshashtaka. "Whatever you like, you can do because you have complete freedom to act. But in spite of all your dealings, you are my worshipful Lord, eternally, and I have no other worshipful object." This is the attitude of the gopis towards Krishna. Lord Krishna was pleased with them, and since they all desired to have him as their husband, he told them, "My dear well-behaved girls, I know of your desire for me and why you worship Goddess Katyayani, and I completely approve of your action. Anyone whose full consciousness is always absorbed in me, even if in lust, is elevated. As a fried seed cannot fructify, so any desire in connection with my loving service cannot produce any fruitive result as an ordinary karma." There's a statement in the Brahma Sangita, "Karmani nirdahati kintu cha bhakti bhajam." That's 5:54 in the Brahma Sangita. "Everyone is bound by his fruitive activities, but the devotees, because they work completely for the satisfaction of the Lord, suffer no reactions." Similarly, the gopi's attitude towards Krishna, although seemingly lusty, should not be considered to be like the lusty desires of ordinary women. The reason is explained by Krishna himself. Activities in devotional service to Krishna are transcendental to any fruit of result. My dear gopis, Krishna continued, your desire to have me as your husband will be fulfilled because it is with this desire that you worship Goddess Kachiyani. I promise you that during the next autumn season, you shall be able to meet with me and you shall enjoy with me as your husband. Later, Krishna, in the company of a coward boyfriend, took shelter of the shade of some trees and became very happy. Thus he addressed the inhabitants of Vrindavan, my dear Stoka Krishna, my dear Varutapa, my dear Bhadrasena, my dear Sri Rama, my dear Subal, my dear Arjuna, my dear Vishala, my dear Vishwal, just look at these most fortunate trees of Vrindavan. They have dedicated their lives to the welfare of others. Individually, they are tolerating all kinds of natural disturbances, such as hurricanes, torrents of rain, scorching heat, and piercing cold, but they are very careful to relieve our fatigue and give us shelter. My dear friends, I think they are glorified in this birth as trees. They are so careful to give shelter to others that they are like noble, highly elevated, charitable men who never deny charity to anyone who approaches them. No one is denied shelter by these trees. They supply various kinds of facilities to human society, such as leaves, flowers, fruit, shade, roots, bark, flavor extracts, and fuel. They are the perfect example of noble life. They are like a noble person who has sacrificed everything possible, his body, mind, activities, intelligence, and words, for the welfare of all living entities. Thus, the Supreme Personality of Godhead walked on the bank of the Yamuna, touching the leaves of the trees and their fruits, flowers, and twigs, and praising their glorious welfare activities. Different people may accept certain welfare activities to be beneficial for human society according to their own views, but the welfare activity that can be rendered to people in general for eternal benefit is the spreading of the Krishna consciousness movement. Everyone should be prepared to propagate this movement. As instructed by Lord Chaitanya, one should be humbler than the grass on the ground and more tolerant than the tree. The toleration of the tree is explained by Lord Krishna himself, and those who are engaged in the preaching of Krishna consciousness should learn lessons from the teachings of Lord Krishna and Lord Chaitanya through their direct disciplic succession. While passing through the forest of Vrindavan on the bank of the Yamuna, Krishna sat down at a beautiful spot and allowed the cows to drink the cold and transparent water of the Yamuna. Being fatigued, the coward boys Krishna and Balaram also drank. After seeing the young gopis bathe in the Yamuna, Krishna passed the rest of the morning with the boys. Thus ends the Bhaktivedanta purport of the 22nd chapter of Krishna, stealing the garments of the unmarried gopi girls. So today we read chapter 21 and 22. And tomorrow we're going to read about delivering the wives of the brahmanas. That's really a wonderful story to all. These are just amazing stories. I'm so happy we're able to read these to all the devotees. And all these readings are saved. If you want to download them or save them on YouTube or Facebook or whatever like that, you can listen to the Krishna book at home at any time. Listen to my narration of the Krishna book. All right, thank you very much. So let us stop sharing, and then we have a few minutes to allow you to ask your questions. Okay. Mr. Gopal, you have a question.
Please accept my obeisance, Srila Gurudev. Earlier in the gopis' discussions amongst each other about Krishna, they refer to him as the son of Devaki. But in Vrindavan, I thought that he was known as the son of Yashoda.
That's so interesting. That's interesting. That's actually from the comment. That's actually from Shukadeva Goswami speaking. You know, Shukadeva Goswami is paraphrasing the gopis. You know, actually, because we're hearing Shukadeva Goswami speaking. So Shukadeva Goswami sometimes is slipping in his own understanding or realization.
I see. Thank you.
Because he's paraphrasing the gopis. Okay. Good question. So, who else has a question?
Lord, please accept my humble obeisances.
Okay, what's the question? I guess you get one question.
It's a question from a devotee from the temple. And somebody left a Shivalinga in the temple. So the devotee took it home. And she said she will be giving it to her daughter to worship because her daughter wants a child. And she said, yeah, it is allowed because Lord Shiva is a great Vaishnava, so we can worship him too. I was just asking.
No comment. No comment. It's let her worship Lord Shiva as a great Vaishnava then. I mean, I have a deity of Lord Shiva on my altar. Not a Shiva Linga, but a deity of Lord Shiva meditating on Krishna. And as long as I understand he is a great Vaishnava and I offer him the remnants of Lord Krishna, then, you know, I don't want to interfere with someone's bhav. As long as they're not worshipping Lord Shiva as independently God or the gods like people do in Hinduism. The gods. You know, so that's, you know, that's their mood. I mean, I'm not going to, I can think of a lot worse things they can do, like offering ganja to Lord Shiva or something like that. You know, I mean, it seems pretty pious in today's world. I mean, basically, today's world is, like, really obnoxious, disgusting, dangerous, highly politicized, you know, just like, you know, you got lusty dogs walking all around, kidnapping children and things like that. You know, so it's, I think if someone wants to, oh, someone wants to worship Lord Shiva, I mean, it's, go for it. Just understand he is a servant of Krishna. All right. Interesting question. Who else has a question? I don't see anyone else raising their hand. Or you can type in the chat window if you want. Okay, Mr. Gopal, you have another question.
Thank you, Gurudev. So, offering some offering to the demigods, when we offer some boga to the deities, we're also offering to our spiritual master. In fact, we say that the prayers to our spiritual master first, expecting that the spiritual master will take the boga and offer to Krishna.
That's right.
So when people are offering to the demigods, being devotees of Krishna, wouldn't the demigods take that boga and offer it to Krishna themselves? And then it would be Krishna?
Not necessarily. Some of them are Saikama devotees. Of course, Lord Shiva is a Nishkam devotee. But that's, they don't authorize that process. That's not an authorized process.
Got it.
Like when we offer on the altar, there's also, you know, the picture of what? The picture of Panchatattva, there's a picture, not just a picture, or, you know, we have the deities of Radha Gokananda. So it goes up the disciplic succession to the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Hmm. You know, so, if, you know, I would say if they have that consciousness that they're offering, you know, it's all dependent on the consciousness of the person making the offering. If they have the consciousness they're offering to Lord Shiva to offer to Krishna, that may be all right, but they don't have that consciousness. Their consciousness is they're offering boga to Lord Shiva. You don't offer boga to the spiritual master, you don't offer... I mean, you on the altar, you offer it as a representative of God, but if you offer it to him just to eat independently of God, then he probably won't accept it.
And the demigod's spiritual master is Brihaspati?
Yes.
Is that correct? So is Brihaspati in the sampradaya of Lord Brahma because he's Lord Brahma's son?
I would assume so. I mean, I haven't heard it spoken or written like that. Mm. But I would assume so. But that has to be done in the right consciousness. I mean, even with offering the Prabhupada is in the disciplic succession. If you just offer the Prabhupada without understanding his position or think that he's supreme, that's also a vidhi purvakam.
Got it.
You understand? I mean, he may offer it to Krishna, but your whole process is done improperly.
Got it.
It's done improperly. You know, and actually, at one point in ISKCON, there were certain devotees who were saying that Prabhupada is God. And Prabhupada got really upset with that. So in other words, another point is that if you're offering to a demigod and you're thinking that he's God or independent, then that will also upset the demigod and he probably wouldn't accept under ordinary circumstances anyway. I mean, that's another way of looking at it. Like if you offered me something that I like, I mean, I don't even know what I'm allowed to eat anymore after this kidney operation. If you offered me some water, I can still take water. So if you offered water to me and you say, God, please accept this water, I'd probably throw the water back in your face. So it's a matter of the consciousness. You understand? So it's the consciousness. You say, my dear God, if you think I'm God with this material body, with all my diseases and everything like that, you got your head screwed on wrong. If you think Indra's God, you got your head screwed on wrong. Okay, thank you, Gopal. Oh, it looks like we have Madhava Sangani is asking a question.
Hi, Krishna Gurudev.
Good to hear you. See you.
Okay, so I'll just quickly ask my question. So I'm trying to understand, please accept my humble obeisances, Gurudev. I'm trying to understand at the temple, it's often now on Prabhupada's Vyasa Puja or any kind of anniversary day, they'll do a public abhishek of Srila Prabhupada. Like all the guests can bathe Srila Prabhupada with milk and all the auspicious substances, Prabhupada's murti. And I can't get my head around it. For me, it's almost like treating Prabhupada as God. And I feel like, I'm wondering when we serve Srila Prabhupada in his murti form or when we're offering, like the kind of vani and vapu kind of, you know, We don't worship him the same maybe as if he was here, you know, in his vapu form. So I'm just wondering if you could elaborate on if you think it's appropriate to do public bathings of Srila Prabhupada.
I think it's appropriate to do public bathings of Srila Prabhupada, although, you know, Prabhupada is not Krishna and we don't want to be thinking he's God. But it's... Krishna very much respects that. Like in the Adi Purana, Krishna says, one who says he's a devotee of my devotees, but one who says my devotee is not my devotee, but one who says he is a devotee of my devotee is my devotee. So it sort of pleases Krishna to do that. That's how we should think about it. That when I'm offering respect to Prabhupada and bathing Prabhupada like that, it pleases Krishna. It's done as an act to please Krishna. We should never see it as a separate endeavor other than pleasing Krishna. One thing I have issue with is that sometimes they offer it to the Vyasa-san separate from the altar. I don't think that should be done, but, you know, it's done everywhere. I think they should offer the boga, you know, talking of the boga. I think they should offer the boga to the deities and then offer the Prabhupada.
Okay, thank you, Gurudev. I just, I think it's interesting because when Srila Prabhupada's bathed and dressed in the morning, we put screens around him. It's done by a male usually, and it's done like with this mood of kind of like being Prabhupada's personal servant. That's kind of the mood that is cultivated here in the temple in Auckland. But then in the public bathing, anybody can come and abhishek Srila Prabhupada. I just find that really interesting.
Yeah, that is it seems it is a contradiction.
Yeah.
I'll be back here. Actually,
that's the first time that's been brought up to me.
That's
actually the first time it's been brought up to me, but it seems like a contradiction. That on Prabhupada's appearance day, you would actually bathe Prabhupada publicly and dress Prabhupada. I don't know if they dress Prabhupada. but they would bathe probably in public. And in other days, they wouldn't let the women drink. Or they put a screen around.
In my mouth like that.
Yeah. Yeah. That's done here.
Here in New Galago, the ladies dress Prabhupada.
Right.
Just like on the altar, we have the men dressing Radharani, so.
Yeah. Okay, well, thank you, Guru.
It seems to be like some sort of chauvinistic thing. Now we're going to get in trouble. Anyway, so. So, okay, thank you. It was nice to see you.
Nice to see you too, Guru. Thank you.
Yes, Krishna says in Bhagavad Gita, here's the question, that we offered, a demigod is actually offered to him, but Krishna says, but it's done improperly. That's what Krishna says in Bhagavad Gita. So, because you have the improper consciousness, Krishna may not accept it. In other words, everything is, in one sense, offered to Krishna. Do we not do the same for the deities of the Lordship? Yeah, we bathe them in public too. That's an interesting point. That normally we don't bathe. I've never had that question. Yes, normally we don't bathe the deities publicly in front of everybody on a normal day, but on Abhishekhs we do. Very interesting question. However, we don't take off their clothes on the public Abhishekhs. That's the difference. Usually what should be done is you put a wrap around the deities and you don't like change their clothes in front of everybody else. So here's a final question. Hare Krishna Gurudev, during the time of annihilation, does the remaining living entities in their subtle bodies take shelter in Garbhadak Vishnu, or are they trying to, actually they go to Mahavishnu during the total annihilation? They go to Mahavishnu, and then when there's another creation, they come out of the Mahavishnu through the glance of the Mahavishnu. Good question. Okay, we are going to end now. Thank you all very much. It's nice to see everybody. Yes, Gurudev Prabhupada wears a dhoti while Abhishek is. People really feel connected. Yeah, so he wears a dhoti. So another way, whenever there's a public Abhishek, there should be clothes on the person or persons that are doing the Abhishek to. Yeah. And it helps people connect with Prabhupada. And what we do here in New Galoka is we have another set of deities for the Abhishek. We're talking about Radha and Krishna, and we allow the public to do the Abhishek, not on the altar deities, but on another special set of deities. Okay, that's very good. Okay, some controversial points here, and good questions. Thank you very much. All glories to His Divine Grace. Srila Prabhupada, Srila Prabhupada.